SiriusXM Sports presents
At the Races with Steve Bick.
Enough! Horse racing, handicapping,
interviews.
This is At the Races with Steve Bick.
A very good Thursday. Race fans, Sirius 219, XM 201, Sports Zone 964. If you're listening to Sirius XM online and at our website too, stevebick.com. And a very happy birthday. I'm going to get this right out of the way because I don't want to let it slip through the cracks. A very happy 90th birthday to Isabel Haskell de Tomaso. 90 years old and a legend on a few fronts. One of my favorite owners in the game, and have talked about her for years. Turns 90 today, and we're gonna put a big push for some emails to her and anybody, the Monmouth community. Especially if you're, a little older, you grew up with Isabel and Hope, Amory Haskell's daughters, running around the racetrack, and then Isabel Haskell launched an open wheel Sebring Le Mans race driving career. You heard me right. the daring debutante, as it were. Unbelievable. Really an amazing woman, and you can't get her to talk too much about her fascinating life and exploits, but continues with her sister to breed horses, the New Jersey breds, and pendulum seemingly, swinging, hopefully, back for New Jersey in a lot of ways with a guaranteed period here to move forward, even under these circumstances. But it was so much fun with Irish War Cry, rising to prominence, and had to start the show with a big happy 90th to Mrs. de Tomaso. The news around the last 24 hours, a lot of developments at racing circuits. Will touch on four of them, I guess. There's three pieces of good news and one ongoing difficulty. We'll save the ongoing difficulty for a comprehensive Illinois discussion. Again, you started the week with Illinois because it was such an important story with Arlington. But as hinted by Alan Foreman yesterday, Governor Hogan laying out the reopening procedures and so forth, and expected today Laurel already drawn a card for Saturday, and they expect approval today to run starting Saturday and getting the meet back up and going. There's a few different things involved in this, and actually we may talk to Tim Keefe again, and the Maryland THA website has got a handful of things. They're going to do one of the things that New York is doing with waiver claiming, one waiver claim so that you can start a horse that you've been maintaining here for the last 10 weeks and so forth. So Nice news for Maryland. Tim, last week when we talked to him, was they were getting edgy. Canterbury, they also now appear set. The June 10th date, that'll have to be approved by the Minnesota Racing Commission, which meets on June 8th. But exchanged notes with Andrew Offerman last night, and they feel like they've got everything in place that they need to have. And June 10th for Canterbury, they'll run till September 16th. Then Illinois. The good news, they'll resume racing at Fairmount, and they've been off since March 17th. Part of the Phase 3 reopening in Illinois, and they haven't set a date yet, but you'll hear, I'm sure, very soon, Jim Watkins from the Illinois HBPA. And his glee could not, it seems, could not be contained over it. So Fairmount will get going. That's the good news in Illinois. The bad news in and around Chicagoland continues to be the acrimony between Arlington and the Horsemen. Arlington officially canceling Father's Day and July 4th festivities and activities. They will not race unless they can have live patrons. That's the message that they're delivering. And it is to the just dismay, not surprisingly, of the Illinois Horsemen, the Illinois THA, that just don't get it. I mean, they get it, but very, very disheartening, to say the least. And meanwhile, Hawthorne getting ready. They're going to resume the harness meet. So at some point, we'll reach out and get Jim Miller. But as we discussed with Marcus on Monday, the future appears to be Hawthorne. For now, in Chicago. So, a couple of other regional pieces before we get to racing news. And obviously, the racing news will feature last night's, I thought it was fun, the Fawner sequence. I got beat in the last leg, but didn't take away from, a great way to finish. But two other pieces of stateside news, and of course you hear regularly here on Pennsylvania. We're going to talk to Tony, obviously, in hour two today. We couldn't get to Tony last week, and Tony did some of his own protesting out in front of Parks, kind of a rally. You may have seen some of the pictures. We'll talk to them about that. But the Pennsylvania Horse Breeders Association, and we check in with Brian Sanfratello on a regular basis, and they're going to award, essentially, and offer grants to breeders to help cover some costs. I mean, it's not, it's not a windfall by any means, but it's something to just contribute to, increasingly empty coffers. And they're going to offer $250 bonuses or stipends, however you want to call them, for up to four horses. So $1,000 maxes out. And if breeders write to Brian S at PABread.com. Brian S. at PABread.com. You got to be a Pennsylvania Horse Breeders Association member. Either have bred or had a Pennsylvania bred 3 years of age or older. Submit proof. Pennsylvania and non-bred mares qualify as long as they foaled last year or this year. If horse breeding is your primary business, or if you've lost your primary source of income because of COVID, and it'll help. It's $1,000 if you've got four, if you've got two, one, whatever you got. It's something. And details at PABread.com. And then there was some interesting news out of California. I saw the Dan Ross wrote a piece at TDN. The California Thoroughbred Business League, which is a new name, the CTBL. There's all kinds of acronyms in and around the game. That's a new one for me, CTBL. And they have approved a $2 million subsidy from their reserves to help essentially fill the gap on the workman's comp problem that you heard talked about over the winter. So we'll get more details on that. And they're also going to, TOC is going to also create their own director of safety as well. So I thought this qualified as a nice piece of news, because there was going to be an assessment of $1,200, $1,400 to trainers that, per horse, $1,200. Yeah. Mentioned that a few weeks ago. So that seems like a very good piece of news. Anyway, so there's a state roundup, a little Maryland, Minnesota, Illinois, California, Pennsylvania. And, of course, in New York, we continue to be excited. And I think if everything checks out executionally, I think we'll be broadcasting opening day and next Wednesday, Thursday, Friday from Belmont. And then Belmont week. So I'm excited. And believe me, you know who's even more excited? Tina. get rid of me for a period. The racing. Let's talk about last night and how it went at Foner. And boy, the money poured in, over $2 million into that closing day pick five sequence, and it was definitely a sequence that was fair for the small player. And I ended up putting in a couple of different tickets, and including a backup that wasn't but I put in a backup that really wasn't necessary given the dominant effort of Alex of Ice. We talked about as a single with Seth Merrow yesterday, and absolutely, I mean, that race was over, halfway in. And Alex of Ice, just a fleet Alex, four-year-old Kelly Martinez, and that this one was never in doubt. So if you singled Alex of Ice, Armando Martinez handling it and, right around, took over and drew off. So you felt, all right, good. We're under, we're underway. We're safe. We got the first single. Undoubtedly, a number of you would have singled Judge on the Run if you had a small ticket. And this one was much more thrilling, to say the least. And frankly, raise your hand if you thought you were beat, if you had leaned on Judge on the Run. I used Judge on the Run, and You Betcha I'm a Bumper, who finished third in here, about four lengths back. But when they hit the wire, and I think we learned this on that photo, 6 weeks ago? Yeah, the inside horse, it is a little bit of an optical illusion about where the line is and where the camera is. And so when they hit the wire, it sure looked like Chamber Doors was getting there. But Judge on the Run. And you know, Judge on the Run got pounded down, ended up going off at a shorter price than Alex of Ice. Alex of Ice was 1-2, and you know, you figured that. I didn't think Judge on the Run was 2-5 in my book. I went narrow, but I thought You Betcha I'm a Bumper, you know, and I Chamber Doors third, and actually that question marky ended up fourth. When I looked up and saw the. And saw the number when 280 came back. I was like, wow, it just got pounded down. That gets us to the disqualification in the midpoint in that seventh race. And it's funny, I was on the phone with Hammer. And congratulations to Hammer, by the way, who won a qualifier. He won a BCBC qualifier last night. And he actually benefited by this. It was funny because I spread in that third leg, as we had discussed with Seth. It seemed, you know, I thought this was a little bit of a difficult group to decipher, and when they ran it live, A Shimmering Dream, you know, looked like it had. You know, she had all the momentum and was going to go right on by. And when they came together, you know, what was that, about mid-stretch, it didn't look as bad, and I didn't really think anything of it, even when the, you know, when the objection went up, you know, the claim of foul by Jake Oleksiak. But Hammer said right away, our feeds were on different speeds, for a platform. But he said, whoa. He said, whoa, he says, this horse is going to come down. And then seconds later, I got the head on. And you know, I know there's people that are upset because they got taken down, but there wasn't much doubt. This was a 70-30 or an 80-20. Shimmering Dream knocked our Annabelle out of stride. I mean, you could see our Annabelle's legs went in like three directions. And to her credit, Alicia gathered her up and, you know, and persevered. And then they came together again, you know, very late. But the contact that was, you know, the initial contact, I mean, it was considerable. And, it was Elysiac left-handed. Yeah, but it certainly didn't seem in that first meeting together when they came together. Elysiac left-handed wasn't driving our Annabelle into Shimmering Dream. Shimmering Dream and Martinez came down on. That was Ricardo, not Armando. So anyway, Shimmering Dream went off a little under 7-2. Our Annabelle was a little under 5-1. And I know as it happened, Hammer, you know, he said, this is going to put me in the lead because he had picked. Our Annabelle, it was a pick and pray. And so he was all excited. And he went on to win that qualifier. But I thought it wasn't much question. Then you had, how about the nice performance of A Bunch for Lunch? Inhaled them late under Arietta and paid a nice 10.40. You know, a lot of times you make your selections and you're basing your priority list on what you kind of think the horses are going to, you know, what price they're going to go off. And you know, Bunch of Lunch was 8-1, and 5-1 was a good number. I, you know, went back to Indian Roses and Chivalry, and you know, Chivalry was 4-1. The public had as much trouble, I think, with this as I did, because you had five horses: 280, 320, 410, 420, 530. So you had five horses within, you know, $2.50 of each other. But Bunch of Lunch, John Ness, owner, trainer, an Iowa bred, an alternation mare, and that gets us to the nightcap. And you had prices, you know, starting at about 230, 240, right, for the favorites, and you had a very good ride here. Armando Martinez won this race, and I don't want to, you know, I thought Arietta, not that Arietta, you know, moved too early, but, you know, had to withstand. It was going to be vulnerable, it seemed. That was SC Angel. I was trying to get Gypsy Wind Jean. She was a nice, what was she, 12-1 morning line. And I don't know, ended up third in here. I ran second, third, and I was live to three horses. I ran second, third, and fourth. But it was Ebony Knights, Mark Hibden, to end the meet. And send winners home with $408.20. 2.250. $2,250,000 in that pool. So, farewell to Fawner. And I know there's some people who, no matter how many times we try to, you know, merchandise what this kind of racing is and what, you know, the bull ring learning curve has been, They just want to, you know, dump on it. I don't get it. I don't get it. I'm going to try to take this experience to Chucktown, Charlestown. I thought it was tremendously entertaining and fun. Like I said to Seth yesterday, you know, these horses that you got to see, you know, a bunch of times. And, you know, some of them will follow, you know, the Fair Meadows going to start up next. And others are going to, you know, now with Canterbury locked in with a start date, you'll see some of these at Canterbury. So thanks again to Chris Katulak and his team for persevering and then, you know, adding another few weeks of entertainment and force outs, and it was a good experience. Dick Powell is going to join us, and Tony Black, Steve Haskin, Rich Ang. Look a little bit too at some point at Churchill. Gets back today, Charlestown as well, as mentioned, and more. Kicking it to second gear at the races back after this.
It's At the Races with Steve Bick on Sirius XM Radio.
If you are racing two-year-olds in California, Kentucky, please consider Bleeder Shield. The leading all-natural paste used to greatly reduce or eliminate EIPH. The list of trainers who trust Bleeder Shield is endless. Shouldn't you join the team? To learn more, contact Joseph Vellante at 215-501-6880.
Learn the business of horses in the world's only accredited equine business program, the University of Louisville Equine Business Program. The University of Louisville has a legacy of excellence for more than 25 years of equine business education. Classes are taught by industry experts in state-of-the-art facilities located in the heartland of America's equine industry. The University of Louisville Equine Business Program. When it comes to horses, we mean business. For more information, visit business.louisville.edu/equine.
Here in Pennsylvania, we have the best breeding program in the country, thanks in part to our Racehorse Development Trust Fund. It's a trust, it's not tax dollars, and by law, our fund is completely protected. These are difficult days for all of us. When life in America gets back to normal, and it will, our PA breeding program will be here, stronger and better than ever. To learn more about how we're protecting the trust, go to PABred.com to watch a short video.
How's it going, Sue?
Hey!
Have you seen this commercial?
What career track are you on?
University of Arizona Racetrack Industry Program can prepare you for an exciting career in racing. Turn your passion into a paycheck.
Isn't that the horse racing school that Bob Baffert went to?
Yeah, Todd Fletcher, too, and lots of other major players in every area of the industry.
Really? Like what?
Well, for starters, we have graduates who are executives at Churchill Downs, NYRA, Darley America, Gulfstream, Keeneland, you name it. They're also regulators, racing officials, bloodstock agents, track announcers. My class had a job placement rate of almost 90%.
Wow, what other college program has results like that?
What career track are you on? The University of Arizona Racetrack Industry Program. Enroll today and get on track for success. Nearly 90% of our students are employed in the racing industry immediately upon graduation. For scholarship opportunities and more, check out our website at ua-rtip.org.
Breaking down the biggest stories in the world of horse racing. This is At the Races with Steve Bick on Sirius XM Radio.
Step on side to side. Body's gently moving. I let myself fly these times. Thanks for miles and miles. Crowd's been slow.
Back at the races, 25 plus into hour one. Jim Cook with Camel Fat, love that. And we're reaching for Dick Powell. I was going to have Tim Keefe join us, but what we'll do is Tim will give us a preview and some details about Laurel and the resumption Saturday once the approval's done, and that is expected today. So we'll. We'll hold off on Tim. Instead, we'll get Dick in here and talk about yesterday's. Very anxious for Dick's thoughts about yesterday and what's coming up. Before Dick joins us, I don't want to get upset, but earlier we wished a happy birthday. Now I've got to ask for everybody around the game to say some prayers for Ray Amato Jr. Certainly among the backstretch and those that have worked Ray and let Ray work on have Ray work on their horses. A farrier with just a fabulous career and reputation, and he is he's very sick, and significant. Those of you that are already aware, I know there was a GoFundMe set up to to help, and the thing in a matter of hours, blew past a small goal just to help Ray with bills. But just keep Ray Amato in your in your thoughts, it's for New York horsemen in particular, and for those that we're close to Dominic Galluzio. I mean, it's the same situation, and it's kind of rocked a lot of the people that have worked with Ray over the years, and so. I know that the thoughts and prayers moniker has become kind of trite, but in some cases, but in this case, it would be well received. Think about Ray. Dick Powell standing by, and I guess now we will talk to Tim Keefe. Tim giving the thumbs up. And speaking of thumbs up, boy, the news comes at you quick. It looks like Prairie Meadows now is going to have themselves a start date, mid-June, and we'll get details on Prairie Meadows getting a green light. So, boy. This is like a pitching machine. you better get reset quick, because there's another one coming at you. Dick, good morning.
Good morning. Sorry to hear. I don't know Ray Amato, but I know he's a legend in what he does, and that's very sad.
A little very tough. Pancreatic cancer, and it's. And then you start thinking about Dominic, and it's just not easy. Not easy to accept, because this seems we also had Chris from right from Keeneland, same thing. That we just talked about a couple of weeks ago. It's one of those silent, killers. Dick, let's lift spirits and talk about what transpired. And it's funny. I told people going into the all weather card. Yesterday, I thought, we talk so often that it's a chance to bet against against Joey Marrero, but he was suspended. He's on the ground, so we couldn't bet against him yesterday.
Yeah, and Zach Purton won three, so he separated himself a little bit in the rider standings. The all-weather... They started out what slow the first race, and then it was upgraded to good. The times were very fast. We had three 1,200-meter races going 108 and change, and got a couple of them were class fours, so it wasn't like they were stake-type horses. So the all-weather played fast. It usually does, except that last race with Enfolding going the 1650 two-turn. From post 14, Zach Purton was able to drop back, rally wide, get up in time. That was pretty amazing because you just don't expect that from that post. The last month or so, Steve, racing in Hong Kong has become very formful. That chaos we saw, the chaos we usually see, has not really been present. And I'm going through my spreadsheet here, and very few winners at double-digit odds. There was a 10-to-1 yesterday, but even when favorites aren't winning, and there was only two favorites that won yesterday, but most of the prices the last month have been 7-to-1, 8-to-1. things like that. And so the races have been extremely formful. If, you know, 14 horse field, you might not like the favorite, but the second, third, and fourth choices have been doing extremely well. So we'll see if that continues. Joe, I didn't realize Joe was suspended until the card started. And then Zach won the first, won the last, and then in the middle of the card, Tony Cruz goes on this tear, winning three in a row, all with Karis Teton. And Tony is now sneaking up the trainer standings, where he's now tied for second. He's only about six behind Ricky Yu, and he's been just grinding. I mean, he's had 10 winners the last month and just putting together win after win, besides the big races. Tony does great in the big races. We'll get to that in a second with Exultant last Sunday. But Tony's been red hot, and right now Karis Teton's been his main man, and they've been doing great. And with Exulting running in the Champions and Chater Cup, there was a lot of, obviously, pub given to Tony. And when you look up Tony's riding career, it's spectacular. I mean, forget it. You know, obviously, he's one of the great trainers ever in Hong Kong. He's one of the, in the history of the Hong Kong Jockey Club, this guy is just remarkable what he did from a kid. And learn to ride, then go to Europe, and he won the Coronation Cup. He won just about every major race in Europe as a rider. And then he gets into training, and he's won seven Champions and Chater Cups, and just the horses he's trained over the years. It's just unbelievable. So Tony, very recognizable. He's now pushing. He's born in 1956, so he's 64 years old. No, yeah, 64. So it seems like he's been around forever, and he has, but the records he's just accumulated, I think it really bears stopping and saying, wait a minute, we got to take a look at this guy. It's just unbelievable what he's done. So Tony had a big day yesterday, and that is the last all-weather card of the season, that they run those Wednesday nights at Sha Tin. And there still will be some all-weather racing, although this Sunday there's 11 turf races. But there's always a couple all-weather races at Sha Tin throughout the season. But that's the last card where it's all racing. And then the racing was good. It was just very exciting. And like I say, looking back, these are very fast times. I mean, they ran the Class 2 race, that King's Shield one, that one in 136.75. I mean, that's fast for the 1650. And you just saw that yesterday. They were beating par for most of the class and distances. So that's in the books. Last Sunday, we had the final Group 1 of the season, the Champions and Chater Cup. And it was I thought it was an amazing race because Exultant was the favorite. And yet, Time Warp goes to the front, which everyone knows he's going to, and no one went with them. Now, this is the advantage of a small field. Not everyone, you know, it's a $10 million Hong Kong dollars race. So not everyone wants to chase Time Warp because you're probably going to hurt your own chances. So Zach Purton has to apply pressure on Exultant. It's clearly didn't want to do that, but he had no choice. So he's chasing, and the pace was very firm. I mean, they were going fast right from the start. Now they get to the far turn, you know, 600 meters out, and a couple of horses make early moves. So now Zach, instead of waiting to time it just right and run him down in a stretch, now Zach has to go because he can't let these two horses pass him on the outside. So now Zach has to go. Time Warp gets tired, and now Exultant is in the lead, probably too early, at least 200 meters out, maybe 300 meters out. That's a long way in a mile-and-a-half race to be left on the lead. But Zach was strong as could be and got him home. And I think it's his fifth Group 1 win in Hong Kong for the horse, Exultant. And it was just a tremendous race because even though it was it's a $3 horse, he went off at, you know, one to two R odds. It was just fascinating to watch the way you can see Zach's decision-making going into the race. And then besides winning that race, Zach had a really rough day. I don't know if he got kicked in the head before the race in the paddock and the race before and had a bruise, and they had to allow him to race. And then the race after, he gets unseated at the start, gets thrown to the ground. But at least the race that counted, he got the job done, and he continues to ride spectacular over there. I think he's in the last 48 days, he's 28 out of 78. I mean, you just don't see that. Put together that percentage of wins in a month of racing, that's just remarkable. So he continues to press all the buttons, and Joe continues to do so also, other than he missed yesterday. But Joe still has 20 more rides for the season than Zach. So, you know, as Paul Matisse once said, he has like tracks where two jockeys win all the races, but they're certainly winning a lot of races over there. But it's a lot of fun to watch them, and like I say, the money is always in that class below, the riders that are not at the top but below them. But it was a great race Saturday night, and that was great to watch the last Group One for this season.
Well, and as we've discussed a couple different times, there's a few of the stars that they already know are going to be back for next year. It goes a long way toward the continuity and familiarity. They bring in. In fact, this came up. I'm sure you read. Did you read the piece we discussed with the Dan Ross piece, Dick, that we discussed with Chuck on Tuesday? About the trainer, the trainer model, and it had, Nader was interviewed as well as part of it.
Yes.
Yeah.
I didn't hear Chuck talk about it, but yes, I did read that.
Well, because it references the way in which horses are acquired, essentially. It's funny. So often you hear people say, we should emulate the Hong Kong, and that's a lofty goal. It's not all that practical in most most of the working parts, but there are some things about it that are actually interesting and could have some sort of variation. We've talked about the commissary, the apothecary on track, resource as the only, the only dispensary for medications. I mean, that's something that could easily be, become part of habit and practice. But the way in which stock is brought to Hong Kong is very interesting, and I don't know if we've really ever broached it, and today's not necessarily the day to do it, but I'm only familiar with it because of a horse that had with John Parada that Chuck trained, that was under consideration to go to Hong Kong. I mean, they basically, scour the world and acquire the stock that then comes over, and then the pool of owners, with the dues and whatever. It's an interesting topic.
Yeah, it's complicated, and they have international sold Griffins, privately purchased Griffins. They buy some young horses. Some owners are wealthy enough. In Australia, the Easter sale, there was a couple of horses that were purchased by Hong Kong owners. Now, they might start their career in Australia. Some will, some won't, but they're looking at three-year-old racing, like an Athero that would eventually go to Hong Kong. But the typical horse is it's normally a sprinter because they have so many sprint races in Australia and New Zealand, have so many good sprinters. But they're looking for decently rated horses that do not have stallion potential, because if they're not gelded already, they're probably going to be gelded. And just no issues with bleeding. So if you were ever on a bleeders list, you're probably not going. So they kind of like separate those horses out. And then the complicated factor for people following it is many change their names. And that gets frustrating. It also gets tough for international simulcasting, because if a racing jurisdiction has a database, for instance, Viva Pateka was one of the all-time greats. He was right. Like a comic strip when he ran in Europe. You know, Silent Witness had a different name, you know, that they almost all do. And that's great for the owners, because they also have, the owners have these little things that they do with their horses. You know, there's the Beauty Stable, Beauty Generation, Beauty Star, all the beauty horses, and that's usually one group of owners, and so that's a lot of fun. But to follow it internationally makes it a little more difficult, but it's a great process to achieve the goal that they want to achieve. And I don't think it works here for a number of reasons, but I think the biggest issue would be the ownership issue, that there's only a limited number of owners and obviously a limited number of jocks and trainers. And then they kind of all get thrown in the pool and they go from there. But it's a fascinating model. And the drug thing, there's no reason why we can't do that. I mean, absolutely no reason. And just that we just don't have the interest. There was a couple of, you know, openings, people training off track, people that are coming in from a training center or wherever else. But then you make that horse get there early. You make that horse come at least a day before the race, and you subject that horse to drug testing before you do anything, which is what they do in Hong Kong. When horses ship in, international horses, they're immediately drug tested. And they've had horses ship in, and they don't pass. And it's probably because of something that hasn't passed through the system, and then they have to pass more drug tests in order to run. So Perfect World, yes, what they do is very, very good. As far as betting, it's spectacular, because it virtually guarantees you full starting gates for all the races and very competitive races. You know, these horses that are in the five classes, you know, you don't see a 40 claimer dropping down to 10 if you're in class 4. The only way to get to class 5 is to lose a bunch of races, and then that's not helping your standing with the club. That trainer isn't doing a job and stuff. So I got to go back and look, because I heard Chuck was very good, and I got to go back and listen to that. But yeah, definitely, it's I know Dan did a good job with that story, and just a lot of little things that we could pick up. But I mean, I'd like to follow up with what Alan was saying yesterday. But I mean, one of the things that Alan was saying was, you know, he made a presentation. We did that. We did that. But it wasn't the we that you're supposed to have in racing in America. You know, a lot of it was the racing jurisdiction, and a lot of it was racing commissions that got together and worked on standardized medicines, withdrawal times, you know, things, what's approved, what's not, just stuff like that. So,
but yeah, there's the ownership thing that I kind of floated just as, and I'm anxious when we get to OBS and you know, see how these 2 year olds, what kind of clearance we get, and you know, the redistribution. But I think there's potential, for some of the big operations to have more of the, you know, I suppose we don't need more corporate intervention per se, but I think there is some merit to floating that. The idea that, I keep going to Windstar because they are the, they're the big box store of breeders. The potential to, fill up some barns and spread horses around and, prime the pump, as it were, with an innovative approach. So we'll see. That membership or ownership dues concept There's something there, I think, Dick.
That definitely. And I know one thing, having been to Dubai, where Hong Kong horses had raced, if you're a member of the Hong Kong Jockey Club, you're expected to be at the races. This is not something you just take lightly as some ceremonial type thing. And obviously, this year, that's probably not the case. But you're there for a lot of, you know, not just owning horses, but you're there to help oversee and be part of something. And it's very measurable. The minute the races are over, I get that email. I'm sure you get it too, with the handle statistics for the day and stuff like that. And there's a lot of eyes on their racing.
So that's, well, let's put our eyes on the racing this weekend, Dick.
Yeah, let me go back to my notes here. Okay.
Whoa, you came very close. We almost lost power here.
Oh, really? I've had a couple of mornings where we've lost power at 6 o'clock for like 30 seconds. Thank God I have a 16-kilowatt generator. And it's just 20 seconds after the power goes out, the generator comes on and all else is
nice.
Back to normal. No, that's... Well, where I live, when we lose power, it's days.
Yeah,
we're in a low priority zone.
People have no idea.
Yeah. So yeah, we have some outages, but Sunday morning, early post time. There's 11 races, and Hong Kong is simulcasting the Japanese Derby that night. So they start at 12:15 Eastern Time, 9:15 Pacific Time. So that's a little bit of a curveball, which is good. I like the early races. And running 11 in a simulcast race, they're still going till pretty early in the morning, like 4:30, 5 o'clock. So I always wake up 3, 4 o'clock anyway, so I just turn on my iPad and see what's going on. But so 12:15 post time. We have a Group 3 in Race 9. It's the Lions Rock Trophy, 1,600 meters, and it's a handicap. So what's a little bit different than the other Group 1s is, being a handicap, there's a pretty wide discrepancy in weights and ratings, and there's a lot of lightweights in this field. Lightweights meaning they're rated lower, so they get in with lighter weights. So I don't have a pick in that race. I know Kai Ying Star is going to be tough to beat for Tony Cruz. But it should be an interesting race. And some of the other horses are getting so much weight. I mean, there's a bunch of horses in here with 113. And Kai Ying Star is carrying 129. The favorite, Southern Legend, who probably, I mean, he'll be close to odds on. He's carrying 133 for Casper Founds. So nice race, because the two kind of stickouts are penalized, and some other decent horses are getting in pretty light in here. Looks like a field of 11 will be going, so that's good. And then I have four picks for Sunday. Race 1, I like the 2. In fact, three of the races I like the 2. Race 1, I like the 2, Hurricane Hunter. And right on the cusp of Class 2, Class 5, Class 4, Class 5. Now he's in Class 5, which is 0 to 40. He's rated at 39. He gets Zach Purton. Breaks from the 9 hole, going 1,400 meters. Horse has no speed, but a big leg kick. And I think against this competition, he can run them down. The horse to catch is probably number 4, Multimax. So he could be dangerous if he shakes loose. But I think Hurricane Hunter, number 2 in Race 1, can run him down. Race 4, I like the 2 again, Quadruple Double. Good speed, one last time out, moves up to the top of Class 3, so he doesn't leave Class 3 to go to Class 2, so he gets a bit of a break there from the handicap. Off a nice win, he picks up 6 pounds in weight from that, and but he gets 10 pounds off because he gets the apprentice rider, Jerry Chow, who's a 10-pound apprentice rider. But the way Hong Kong does things, these apprentice riders have a lot of international experience when they left the Hong Kong Jockey School. So Jerry Chow is a competent rider, and he gets in very light for the 6 furlong race. Race 6, we have a class 4 going 1,400 meters. I like number 2, Party Genius. Had a series of bad draws, 12, 12, 12. That's bad as it gets. And ran well in all of them. Now he draws post 6. He gets Zach Purton back aboard. Doug White is the trainer. Doug's had a real good season in his first training season. So he's trying to emulate Tony Cruz as a champion jack that's on the way to becoming a champion trainer. So they look like a potent combination. Race 6, number 2, Party Genius. And race 7, number 1, Gala Knight is another Jerry Chow mount. This one for John Moore. They're going 1.25 miles. He draws the rail. He gets 10 pounds off, so he gets in with 123, not 133. He's the highest weighted horse. He's right at the top of class 4, but with the apprentice allowance, he's towards the bottom of it. So this looks like a good opportunity for Chow to get this horse out. There's a little bit of speed in the race, but I think this will be a tactical race, and getting the weight off, he should be very tough. So those are 4 picks this coming Sunday at Sha Tin, 12:15 Eastern Time, 9:15 Pacific Time for the 11 race card.
Excellent. Deck, thank you.
And can I follow up quickly on Alan? What Alan was talking
about?
Yeah,
of course. Sure.
He was talking about confirmation testing. You have a test, and then there's an issue, and then it goes out for another test. And he called that, goes to the referee lab, and it's called the B sample. And that's the exact way that it should be done. Unfortunately, I don't know if you've had, have you had Drew Moniker on to talk about this? Drew has.
Not on that topic.
But the issue that Drew has presented in many appeals is there's no B sample oftentimes in New York.
Right, right.
That they're saying, well, there wasn't enough sample and we couldn't split it. And Drew's point, and Drew has a number of clients, trainers that have had this happen to them. And his point is, you're denying my client a constitutional right to appeal under the process. So it was a great point on Alan's part, but I think when you apply it to New York, that hasn't always been the case, that there's going to be a B sample. Yes, there should be a B sample, but not always the case. And what I liked what Alan was talking about, and I know he's more politically correct than I am, but when you take out Hong Kong and maybe Japan, he was basically saying our testing is the best. And we test for more substances. We have the best labs, the best, like he was saying about how our labs, in order to get accredited every 6 months, they get sent samples, and they have to be able to identify all the samples. And if you don't, you got to figure out what you did wrong and stuff like that. Where he said in international labs, it was basically an audit process. Come in and check your paperwork and things like that. So I know we beat ourselves up over here unnecessarily. Oh, we got to be like the rest of the world. We got to be like Europe. And as I pointed out, well, Britain doesn't even test every race. And they certainly don't test 3 horses in every race. And yet they're supposed to be the model for us. So it was interesting hearing that conversation, and Alan obviously knows what he's talking about. He's very articulate. But I'll come out and say our testing is way better. And I remember Rick Violet always had that point that he'd love to go to Europe in a major race, draw blood on all the horses after the race, or collect urine, whatever you got to do, and bring them over here and have our labs test. So I was glad. Alan kind of reinforced that. Didn't come out and make the comparison that I'm making, but it was there.
No, we've brought this up. I mean, this notion, that over there it's pure as the driven snow.
Yes.
Okay. Yeah. Okay. Right. Deck,
yeah.
Thank you. I appreciate that contribution, too.
Yeah, well, I enjoyed what Alan had to say and breaking down the process so that people understand what this whole thing means.
Yes. Yeah. Yeah.
And then clearly, if there is a red flag on the first test, it is not supposed to be available to the public before the B sample is finalized. And as he said, I remember Jay had said, whatever day you had Jay on, Jay Privman, about
yesterday.
You know, they got word of this on Sunday, and it's probably what Alan said, that a purse was withheld, and that's the big red flag, that something happened in the race, not knowing which horses. But it's not good when this stuff is being batted around without a final adjudication. Maybe it was nothing, and all the damage is done.
Yep. We'll save those postscripts.
I know you want to let loose, Steve. Come on, I know.
No, I really don't. I mean, I do know that, you know, for those that are so convinced of every, you know, of everything, you know, they, you know, one problem we've got is that any medication overage is interpreted as a drug positive, an attempt to influence it. It's unbelievable. No interest in knowing what the products are, how they're used. You know, somebody asked me on Twitter, why is lidocaine illegal? It's not illegal. It's a legal med. It has to be withdrawn from the horse 72 hours out. Not every horse metabolizes the same either, and I'm not addressing this specific instance. It's nobody's interested in the mechanics, and it's just so unfair to, you know, everybody that, you know, that works hard and everybody that is dedicated to these, you know, to all of these procedures and, you know, to the inner workings. And then there's the idiotic notion that, oh, these horses shouldn't get anything. They should never, if they can't run without, without any, non-steroidal, anti-inflammatories, then get rid of them. They shouldn't be allowed to. It's so preposterous that it's just laughable. It's amazing to me. Very frustrating.
In history, and it's only recently since Lasix has been legalized that it's all gone bad.
Yeah. Well, I mean, I've said
hate to laugh about it, but there's a big part of this that it is laughable that the contortions that I'll name names, the contortions that the Jockey Club has put them through in order to get this stupid federal bill passed has been so damaging in the meantime. What's going to be left
Correct.
When they finally get it?
Well, that's it. The carpet bombing of, you know, of the horseman community. They've painted everybody with this gigantic roller. It's difficult to stomach, honestly. There's so many parts of this that I've got to get Tim Keefe in here and talk about the good news that is pending sometime today. But Dick, outstanding. Thank you.
All right, Steve. Talk to you next week.
Dick Powell, everybody. We'll talk to Dick. Looks like we'll be at Belmont this time next week. And Tim Keefe standing by, listening in, and probably nodding his head in agreement on a lot of these topics from the Maryland THA. Tim, good morning.
Good morning, Steve. Thanks for having me on again.
Not at all. Alan Foreman was with us yesterday, and in passing, as we were wrapping up on the major portion of Alan's visit, it occurred to me to ask, where things stood, and he delivered the good news of that you know Governor Hogan was expected yesterday afternoon to kind of lay the groundwork for Laurel to resume the season. And there's one more I to dot and T to cross, correct?
It seems to be the case, yes. So, you know, I'm always careful in what I say so that it doesn't come back and bite me in the rear end. But, yeah, so yesterday Governor Hogan at his press conference announced the finalization of his opening of Phase 1 to resume on Friday, to commence, I guess, on Friday at 5 p.m. We believe, the racing community, and we believe we're in compliance with his executive orders. The formality now that we have left to get past is the Maryland Racing Commission at their meeting today. We're going to formally ask for their approval of live racing to begin on Saturday. So in anticipation of this, we've taken entries for day one. We call it day two. And today we're taking entries for day three, which, again, if everything goes as we hope and expect, we'll begin racing on Saturday.
Outstanding. And I mentioned that at the MarylandHorseman.com website, there is a list of the procedures and things that everybody, and of course those that are on track and training are you know complying already. But there's some things, in fact, came up with New York. There's a couple of little rules that are seem poised to you know be part of the resumption. Can you address those?
Well, we do have protocols in place. They are listed on the website, as you indicated, and they're going to evolve and change as time goes. I mean, they're not etched in stone. They're not written in ink. They're meant to change as circumstances change. So currently there are some rules and protocols, such as, you know, entries are open for in-state horses only currently. And that'll change eventually. You know, we have a jockey colony here in Maryland that the jockeys are riding here exclusively in Maryland, not to travel out of town, et cetera. You know, hopefully at some point that will change also. It's just a matter of time just to see how, you know, see how the, how everything else, you know, how the pandemic, how the health concerns, how they change and, you know, hopefully it continue to improve. So yes, there are protocols in place as there are everywhere in every industry to reopen. But again, we'll change those as we can. And you know, one of the big things we're trying to do is get owners back out here. You know, the owners understand, the vast majority of them obviously do, to, that, you know, in order to run, we need the bare minimum people here. It's trainers and the help, you know, the grooms, et cetera, to get these horses and jockeys to get these horses running. So you know, we are working, again, depending upon the health and how things go, to get owners back out here and eventually get the out-of-state horses to make their entries in here as well. But it'll take time.
No doubt. And that's been, you know, that's kind of been the watchword as you know, the regions have all, you know, gotten in line here to get rebooted. There's also a one-time waiver on claiming price once you get started, and also talk about the layoff horses and, you know, having to record works to, you know, qualify to run.
Well, they're all part of the safety concerns that we have and keeping the, you know, the horses and riders safe, et cetera. You know, horses that have been off for more than 150 days have to have a certain procedure they have to go through. Again, that's indicated on the website. Yeah, I had to get in touch with our state vet, Libby Daniels, Dr. Libby Daniels. There's a form to fill out. You know, a lot of this is waived for, typically this time of year when the turf horses are coming back, et cetera, those horses are going to have more than a 150-day gap in their, since their last start. You know, so again, those are things that we're trying to work with. We're trying to make it not so cumbersome, the difficult one for the trainers to fill out and fill out so many forms. And for Libby, actually, she's been inundated with you know, these things. So we're working, you know, at the process we're trying to work through to make things a little more streamlined, a little bit easier for everybody. You know, works, you got to have, you know, again, those the rules and regulations are on the website. You have to have a certain number of works since your last start. First-time starters have to have a certain number of works, including a gate work. You know, again, it's all an effort to try to keep, you know, keep things safe and to keep the horses and riders safe and, you know, keep everything moving smoothly.
Also, let's outline the policy on the horses that, if they haven't run since March 15th, which was when racing was suspended, you got a 90-day window to run and at the claiming level, but essentially a waiver claim situation.
Right, and your last start, you know, you can run for the same price as your last start, and run for the waiver. You know, so, or, you know, you can run for more. If you run for 16, you want to run for 25, et cetera, you can run for the waiver. If you run for 16 since your last start, you can run back once for 16, and it's 90 days. It's an effort to try to get, you know, look, we've all had these horses in the barn for the last 3 months. We've been dying to run them. We've put a lot of time and money and effort into them, and it'd be a shame to run them right off the bat, you know, at the right level, you know, whether it's 10, 15, 20, 50, whatever the price may be, and then have somebody reach in and take them, and, you know, 3 months of your hard work, time and effort and money are gone with the horse. So that was an effort we tried to do, to try to help the owners and trainers try to help get through some of this. So you know, hopefully it'll work out. I think it will.
New York applying similar elements to their resumption next Wednesday. All these details are at mdhorseman.com, at the Maryland Horseman, the website, and also I'm sure on the overnights and in the Horseman's section at laurelpark.com. I've got the Sunday overnight, and basically what we've become accustomed to is overflow fields and no trouble filling up a 10 race card Saturday and Sunday.
No, we probably could have filled 12 or 13 races, but again, we're kind of hamstrung in the money we can put on the overnights, etc. So everybody's dying to run. And it'll slow down a little bit as we get this first wave of runners back out there and everything. And the bottom line is, none of us have a crystal ball. We're trying to all get through this uncharted territory as best we can. We try to make the best decisions we can. We try to put the best rules and protocols in place to keep everybody safe. It's difficult. You're going to make some mistakes. You're going to omit some people, and certainly not intentionally, but. You know, it's been very difficult on a lot of people trying to get through this, and hopefully we're seeing the light at the end of the tunnel now.
Yeah, outstanding, and I'm sure everybody at Laurel, at MJC, with Sal Sinatra and George Ann Hale, and still relatively new racing secretary Jillian Tulick, doing everything to get things off to a flying start. One thing to ask, I suppose, about as well is what's going to happen with the stakes program for the middle part of the year?
To be determined, to be honest with you.
Okay.
I don't have an answer for that right now. It's just to be determined. To see, you know, again, to see how handle is, see how the races go, see when the casinos and slots get back online, et cetera. You know, all of those things will all factor into what kind of a stakes program we either will or we won't have. So, to be determined.
Well, rank and file horsemen and turf racing right away, and we'll start looking at those Laurel cards once the rubber stamp comes down later today. Tim Keefe, thanks a lot. Well
done.
Thank
you, Steve. I appreciate it.
Not at all. Tim Keefe, everybody, from the Maryland Horsemen and the THA team and everybody at Laurel. Got to be excited, and this came together quickly. And actually, it really kind of fits that same, that same MO that, that seems to be being replicated around the country. Kind of a holding pattern, and then boom, go. So between the last couple of days and today, Canterbury, Laurel, Fairmont. We heard about Prairie Meadows. We got to look into those details. Nice. Let's add these up. Gulfstream, Charlestown, Golden Gate, Ruidoso, Lone Star, Assiniboia, Tampa Bay, just another week, Tampa Bay. And then, of course, Tampa Bay's also got the June 30th, July 1st, that simulcast, those simulcast cards they do. Santa Anita and Churchill. So then we'll have Laurel Saturday, Mountaineer Sunday, Belterra. Thistledown, I got to get a start date on Thistledown. Fort Erie on Tuesday, they start. Belmont on Wednesday. Evangeline on Friday. I think Woodbine, right? Woodbine on Saturday the 6th. Louisiana Downs on the 6th. Delta's Quarter Horse Meet June 10th. Now Canterbury June 10th. Indiana Grand June 15th. Delaware June 17th. Emerald June 20th. Dad's birthday. And Belmont Stakes Day. Los Al, of course, after Santa Anita closes, June 25th. And Ellis, June 28th, after Churchill wraps up. And then into July, Monmouth, Keeneland with their little five-day thing. It looks like July 13th for Finger Lakes. And then it's Saratoga and Del Mar. Unbelievable. Pennsylvania continues to be a bit of a black hole right now in terms of a path forward. Let's go to Pennsylvania. We'll take the break here. Tony Black is standing by. I think he's doing shopping for his mom. And we'll talk to Tony about his protest out there on Street Road in Bensalem the other day. Tony Black next.
The latest racing news. It's At the Races with Steve Bick on Sirius XM Radio.
Developed by Horsemen, Horsebills.com is a cost-effective, time-saving, environment-friendly, paperless revolution of how equine industries bill and receive payments. Vendors are able to generate electronic invoices for each horse, whose owners can pay through the same website with just one click. Say goodbye to stacks of invoices, handwritten checks, and postage costs. Easy accounting for all parties with the highest online security measures. Get started free at Horsebills.com. Simply register with your name and email address. Free to sign up. No subscription fees to vendors until the first invoice. Voices sent. For owners, you get a free account, comprehensive dashboard with information on all horses owned and billing records, ACH and credit card payment options. For vendors, generate invoices efficiently and receive payments quickly from both owners and other vendors. Syndicate and partnership managers get flexible billing and payment options to both vendors and syndicate members. For more info, call 888-938-4643, 888-938-4643, or log on to horsebills.com. That's horsebills.com.
Get started in Kentucky. Over $8 million in additional purse money is available at the five Kentucky tracks for horses eligible for the Kentucky Thoroughbred Development Fund. Kentucky is a good place to race your Kentucky bred. Come home to Kentucky and make a start.
DRF Sports Forum Digital Edition, your ultimate weekly betting guide. Published by Daily Racing Form, DRF Sports Forum delivers all of the analysis and insight you need for every NFL game and more than 40 college football matchups. Beat the spread with powerful trends and sharp angles. Tap into best bets, expert picks, parlay winners, and more. All for just $4.99 per issue. Get this week's edition free. Visit drf.com/sportsforum. Enter code DRF Sports.
University of Arizona Racetrack Industry Program can prepare you for an exciting career in racing. Turn your passion into a paycheck. Nearly 90% of our students are employed in the racing industry immediately upon graduation. What career track are you on? The University of Arizona Racetrack Industry Program. Enroll today and get on track for success. For scholarship opportunities and more, check out our website at ua-rtip.org.
Why is accreditation important in aftercare? The Thoroughbred Aftercare Alliance's standard of accreditation and grant process provide donors with confidence that their contributions are allocated in the most effective manner. TAA accreditation is only awarded after a complete review of an organization. Aftercare cannot be an afterthought for the industry. To learn more or support the TAA's mission, visit thoroughbredaftercare.org.
Sirius XM Sports presents At the Races with Steve Bick. Enough! Horse racing, handicapping, interviews. This